The guy who beat Max Drew at the endurance competition from Beast of the Bars at Beast Wars 2 weeks ago, Bruno, is now in the interview. He shares a lot about his endurance workouts, about his nutrition. You see all the topics of the interview in the timestamps here, so you can jump to the topic that is most interesting for you. In the name of Team Gore Nation, I wanted to say thank you for an amazing 2023. Let's rock 2024 together. Thanks for your support, and let's jump into the interview. So Bruno, welcome to the podcast. I'm super happy to have you here. We met the first time, I think 2 weeks ago, roundabout, and in Sweden, Stockholm, where you've stunned everyone with your extreme power and endurance during the Beast Wars endurance competition, and you've won there. So congratulations again, and yeah, super nice to have you here.
Thank you so much, man. First of all, hi to everyone who is watching this. Yeah, it was a blast, you know, the whole competition. Crazy story, I almost didn't come, which was because, like, the qualification round that we needed to send online was just after the, like, World Cup that was held down in Latvia. So I was fully injured, and I was like, I should probably skip this one, you know, but something in my head tell me, no, you need to come, you need to come. And I was like, okay, I'll do it injured, these qualifications. So if it passes, it passes. If it don't, it don't. And it passed. So yeah, this was definitely a life-changing moment this year. A highlight, definitely.
Nice. That's super cool. What kind of injury was it from Latvia?
It's not actually from Latvia. I was also going in the World Cup injured. It's a tendinitis, you know. I have overuse injuries from high-volume trainings and stuff like that. So yeah, it's pretty hard to get rid of.
That's true. Nice. So yeah, was super nice to get to know you there. I'm super looking forward to this interview and to get to know you even better. Can you tell us more about yourself? Who are you? Where are you from? What do you do?
Yeah, of course. So everybody know that my name is Bruno. I come from Croatia. I live next to the capital city of Zagreb. So right now I'm working at the television house. It's like, I'm actually proud of it. It's number one television house in Croatia. I really love my job. So I currently do street workout as like a hobby, something that will eventually maybe I'll be able to, you know, make a full-time job out of it. Outside of that, like my other hobbies, I really love shooting videos. I love editing videos. I'm a pretty creative person, so I kind of like to connect, you know, street workout with shooting videos. So I always try to make some dope edits and stuff like that.
Nice. And in the television house, your job is a videographer, or what are you doing?
It's not really videography. I don't shoot videos, but it's pretty similar. I kind of edit them. I work in softwares that are made for like graphic designs, something like After Effects, Photoshop, stuff like Adobe Premiere, and yeah, something like that.
Interesting. And about the hard facts, because I know people always ask about them, how old, how tall, and how heavy are you?
Oh, yeah, that's true. I'm 172 centimeters tall, about 76 kgs, and I'm natural, so we can cover that fact as well.
Nice. And how old are you right now?
Oh, yeah, I'm 25 years old.
25. Nice. Yeah. Maybe just tell us about how you got in touch with the sport. How did you start doing crazy rep numbers like today? You have to have started somewhere as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's a story that's probably every 14-year-old can attach to, because, like, you know, when you hit puberty in your 13s, 14s, you always think about, man, I need to get shredded for the girls and, you know, stuff like that. I need to be handsome for the girls. And that was basically the same story with me. I kind of wanted to get buff because I thought that girls are attracted by muscular guys. And not much after I realized that's not the case, because in all this 13-year-old career, I kind of attracted more guys than girls. So guys, if that's your main goal by starting it, don't even try it. But yeah, anyway, I started like that. I think it was like 7th or 8th grade of my elementary school. I remember going out and there was like a empty space outside my school backyard that guys that were like maybe 1 or 2 years older than me made a primitive street workout park there, and they were kind of having just regular workouts. And at the time, I didn't know what street workout is. And when I wanted to get buff, I was always thinking about, you know, going to the gym. But for that, you needed the money, and I didn't have the money at the time. And also, there were rumors that you shouldn't go to the gym, lift weights if you're that kind that young. So that sport kind of, that's why I get interested in the sport. And there was that one guy, I think, he was probably 1 year older than me, but when I saw him, bro, you had to see how shredded he was. I was like, can you really look that way by just, you know, doing basic exercises like pull-ups, push-ups, dips? And he had that Max True abs, you know, so I really got attracted by that. So I was like, okay, that's the sport I'm going to try and work out, you know. And basically that's how I started. I was pretty strong for a beginner, I would say. I was already able to connect a couple of pull-ups, push-ups, dips. So I kind of started with circular routines, a couple of, you know, pull-ups, push-ups, dips, separated by a minute and a half rest. And everything else is history, I guess.
Interesting. So, yeah, because when you said that you wanted to get buff for the girls, I think the most common thing would be to go to the gym, which as a young guy with 13, 14 is difficult, because I also had the rumors, or I don't know if it's true, but that young guys shouldn't lift weights because it can stop their growth or like give problems later. Yeah. So you started at a higher level in street workout, like higher level in terms of most people struggle with their first pull-ups in the beginning, but you had a really good foundation already. Did you do any other sports before?
Yeah, that's what I just wanted to mention. Because I have such a good foundation, I was actually training wrestling, which is like a straight strength sport. You really have to have some power. And I remember after every training session, a trainer will told us, before you go home, you need to do this exercise for this amount of reps. And that was kind of motivating because we couldn't get home before we finished all the reps. And that's kind of, actually, that was my first touch with street workout. Just I didn't realize it back then. But yeah, I was doing pull-ups even back then. And we were climbing ropes, doing push-ups and stuff like that.
Interesting. Can you take us more on the way to becoming the Bruno you are today, the guy beating Max True at the Beast Wars competition? Can you take us more? What was your training system? Why did you progress so fast? Is it because you train like really disciplined and with a good system, or do you think it's more your genetics? Can you take us more on your way from the 13, 14 year old to now?
Sure. So I think all that you mentioned, I think it's a little less everything in a certain amount. So I definitely think that I'm gifted genetically. As you heard, I'm pretty short. I mean, 76 kilograms. But of course, there is a lot of hard work behind it. I think that I started with a pretty good foundation and training style, because I kind of, even today, I stick to the same kind of approach that I began with, which is crazy because I was fortunate enough to even start to train that way, which is kind of circular routines with short amount of rest. I didn't really know anything about the sport back then, but somehow, you know, I managed to get it right, because many people start one way and then kind of change it on the way forward, because they kind of look the other videos, hear what other people are talking, and they think, you know, that's the way to go with it, and they kind of change it, and their body just doesn't, you know, have to adapt on a new training style. So yeah, I kind of started correctly. I was I actually wanted to be a freestyler back then. I mean, that was pretty popular at the beginning of calisthenics, you know, freestyle, doing planches, doing front levers. But I never specifically trained for a freestyle. I was always doing regular trainings with pull-ups, push-ups, dips. And then when I felt like I have a strength, I would like just, you know, try to do a straddle planche or a back lever. And that's how I climbed up. That's how I, you know, realized, okay, I'm powerful enough for this. Let's now go, I don't know, to a bigger element. But then I realized, even though I'm good in statics, acrobatics was never my strong suit, which is very important for the competitions. You want to have like static, dynamic and acrobatic if you want to win, you know. So that's when I realized, okay, maybe this freestyle wasn't for me. But I still realized that every night I'm doing sets and reps. So I kind of, sets and reps wasn't popular back then. It was getting popular maybe 4 years after I started to train calisthenics, but I always kind of stick to it. And when it got popular, I remember that I signed up for a first competition. I was already going to college back then. And I realized I have potential, you know, to be good in that. So I kind of stick to it. I realized there were a crew back then that I trained with. And we were basically on the same level on everything, but I always realize at dips, for some reason, I'm especially good, you know, better than anybody in dips. I was doing the same amount of pull-ups as everybody, same amount of push-ups, of dips. For some reason, you know, I'm just good at it. I guess genetics plays a big role in it. So that's why you can see me doing crazy sets like with the dips today. But everything else is purely hard work, I guess.
But interesting that you say that you didn't change your training style too much, because I remember when I started with strength sport in general, it was always said that you need to change, like you need to shock your muscles, you need to give new stimuli to your muscle to change training styles, like from many reps to slower, less reps and stuff like that, to always have like new stimuli for the muscle. What do you think about that?
I definitely think that's true. But if you compare, I don't know, smart approach with just a stubborn approach, I think you end up, you know, on the same level at the end of the day, because I think, on the number one, how would I say that, on the pyramid scale, was the most important thing. It's being, how do you say it in English?
Consistent.
Exactly. Consistency is the number one key. So even with maybe a little worse approach, I ended up doing good because I was consistent enough. I've been doing this for 13 years, you know. So actually, it's a really, really long time when I started and where I am today. There was a really, really big path in between.
And that's super interesting, because we just had a live Q&A with Max True 2 days ago, and he was saying basically the same thing, that there might be smarter ways, there might be more scientific, better ways than his training style, but he's just he's just doing it and being disciplined, and he's having a lot of volume and a lot of reps in it, and this is why in the end he's making more progress, because he's just sticking with this thing. And that's super interesting that you say the same thing. Might not be the smartest, but if you stick with it, if you're disciplined, if you do it consistently, you're winning.
Exactly. At the end of the day, doing what you love is the key, you know.
Yeah. Wow, cool. So can you take us into a typical workout week, into your split for the week right now?
Of course. Right now I'm actually deloading for the obvious reasons. I'm injured as hell. But let's say I'm not, so my casual training week is like, one day is like a circular training where I'm doing 70% pull exercises and then active rest, that are 30% are push exercises. So I use them for active rest, actually. They are not hard, they are just there, you know, to keep my metabolism going. And then the second day, it's push-focused training. It's like a push endurance 90% of the time. That's like some kind of a pyramid where I'm, you know, doing dips on time or push-ups on time. Let's say 1:30-31 pyramid with 45 seconds interval rest.
Can you explain that, the 1:30-1?
It's like a pyramid style. So let's say you have an MM, but in MM you do the same amount of reps on the minute. But I do like pyramid style MM. So every 45 seconds, I do one rep more. I go from 1 to 30, and then I lower it down from 30 reps to 29, 28, 27, and back all the back to 1. You know, so that's kind of the principle. And on the third day, it's kind of mixed. It's between push and pull, 50-50, or I do legs. The third day, I often listen to my body. You know, if I'm sore from the day before, I do legs. If I'm not, I'm doing the push and pull kind of training routine. The fourth day. Oh, wait, let me think. What was the fourth day? I haven't done this in a long time because I'm so injured. I forgot my training routine. Man. I think it's a push routine, another push routine similar to the one before. Fifth day is another pull routine, and the sixth day is leg day. So pull, push, legs, or pull and push, and then again, pull, push, and legs. I think it goes like that. And then the rest day, of course.
Okay. Okay, nice. So you're quite balanced between pull and push, even though you're like, that's at least like what I see is like your strength is mostly in push, but you put the same effort in pull and push throughout the week, right?
Exactly. I like to, you know, keep it balanced because even though I'm good in dips, that's like the only push exercise that I'm good at. I'm in push-ups, I would say I'm equally as good as in pull-ups. So I can do thousands and thousands of dips, but push-ups are, for some reason, you know, much harder for me to do. So I like to keep it balanced for, you know, each case.
Okay. Yeah, but push-ups, at least at the competition, was the exercise where you had a lot of time won in comparison to Max, who is like not the strongest in push. Like it's both on extremely high levels. So it's, but he himself says like push-ups was the weak exercise in this routine where he lost a lot of time.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of saved me.
Yeah. But how did you prepare for Sweden? So you had your rehabilitation after Latvia, and how did you prepare then for Sweden?
Actually, all this time I was having rehabilitation. I was doing deloads for the whole time when I was because I felt like if I'm about to turn up the volume, something's gonna snap. You know, I'm gonna get injured. So I didn't want to risk it. To be honest with you, I really didn't plan to win because I knew that I'm not on my 100%. So winning was just even crazy for me. When I realized that I, in finals with Max True, I was like, you know, you can actually see it on camera. I was in disbelief. I was, you know, shaking my hand like, what the fuck is happening right now? So yeah, I really didn't plan to win. I'm glad it happened because I already told you, it's like a highlight of my of this year. No, great experience. But yeah, I did like basically everything I just said I did, but maybe 60-70% less of what I usually do. Sorry, 30-35% of what I usually do. So I was like on 65% of my true potential on my trainings.
When was the your strongest point that you've been at your strongest?
I think it was last year. That's when everything started to go downhill, because I felt, you know, it's because of kind of, I would like to say I was getting cocky with it, because I really felt strong. I wanted to push my Instagram to grow, you know. And what I realize is when I do like crazy sets, like, I don't know, breaking records or anything like that, it goes kind of viral, you know. So I wanted to do that. You know, I was like, okay, so all I have to do is break a record every week. You know, at that point, it looked possible, but then injuries started to come, and I realized it's not like that. So because of my cockiness, I'm going through what I'm going.
Well, that's a super interesting learning, and I think a lot of athletes have to do this learning, because you can't post a PR every week, you know. You can't post only the, like, as you said, a record every week. It's the body is not made like this. It's
exactly.
I think, do you have an endurance? Do you also have like peak phases and phases where you're just like maintain? Because in street lifting, you have like these different phases you go through in your workout to finally peak after a few months and do a one rep max lift. How does it work in endurance?
Time is a big factor in my training. So, I mean, weather and everything. So when I train in summer, it's hot, so I'm not physically able to do my max. So that was kind of my deloading phase, summer and winter. Winter, it was too cold to give my max, you know. So more naturally, I was the strongest in spring and autumn. That's when my peaking phase, like, came in. So I wouldn't say I was really thinking about it. Everything was happening so naturally, you know, and it worked. So I learned that if something worked, you don't change it, you know.
Okay. So if we would have someone, because we in the questions on Instagram, we received a lot of general questions, you know, how to get it to this level of endurance and explosiveness and your favorite way to progress fast. I think it's really general questions, but what I felt and what I saw also with Max is that a lot of things that are normal for you are not normal for other people. So maybe let's try to find some principles that you have about training that brought you to the level that you are here. Do you have any like principles, any rules for yourself that you think made the Bruno who's sitting here today?
Well, I think I have a good one. Still, maybe a lot of people wouldn't find themselves in that principle. But when I do my trainings, I'm more considered about the rest time to shorten it than to put volume up. So in that way, I kind of adapting my body, you know, to rest quicker and not to do more reps. So my trainings are always like, do this amount of reps in this amount of time. And what matters to me is amount of the time. So in which I done the reps. So when I feel satisfied with the time, let's say, I don't know, I'm doing 1,000 pushups. I want to do them in less than 25 minutes. You know, if I don't do it in less than 25 minutes, I'm doing 100 pushups again the next time. I'm not changing anything. Forms can be perfect, but if I, you know, satisfy my rest periods, my time, I don't change anything about my routine. So many people are considering changing the volume, you know, across the time. But what I'm looking is like that rest in between, you know, to rest as short as possible between the sets.
So you set yourself a routine, your training, you do it, and then you feel, oh, I could have done this much quicker. And then, like, when you're just not maxing out, you try to put the rest shorter and repeat the same thing just quicker.
Exactly. And that's my approach.
when do you go up in volume? When there is minimal rest, like, I don't know, 10 seconds or something? Or when do you go up in volume?
That's a good question. I often like to go, I mean, it still depends of on the routines, but when I'm doing my basic circular routine, that is mostly pull-ups, I lower my rest to 30 seconds. So when I'm able to do everything in 30 seconds, that's when I'm with perfect form, of course, that's when I bring up the volume even more.
Okay, so you bring down the rest to 30 seconds, and then you like keeping the good form, etc. And then you go up in the volume, and maybe you have to go up in the rest again then to 45 seconds or something. And then you try to have the new volume, push it down to 30 seconds, and then again you go up in volume.
Exactly like that, yeah. Yeah.
Interesting, because that's a different kind of progressive overload, but without having to add like 1.25 kg of weight, or like without adding the weight incrementally, but with shortening the rest time.
Yeah, that's the thing, because in body weight, I train pure body weight. I don't have another way to, you know, turn up the intensity, but this one that you just mentioned, yeah, I lower the rest. So that kind of compensates with that intensity that I'm lacking. You know, if I turn down the rest, that means the intensity automatically goes up, because I have much rest to work with, and that's why, you know, it's more intensified.
And I think this training style leads you to regenerate quicker, and at competitions to just be like more enduring. Because I think the term, how do you bring up your endurance, or how do you get to this level of endurance, is basically another question for how do you regenerate so quickly? How are you capable of taking back power so quickly? Would you agree to that? Is endurance the capacity of being able to regenerate quicker?
Yeah, being able to do the same intensity for a long amount of time. Yeah, it's like marathon. Yeah, you kind of find intensity that works for you, for your body to cope with for the rest, I don't know, 30 minutes, 1 hour. And the closest training that you can do for that is like MMs, you know. So you have a certain amount of time to rest, which is always the same. You try to keep the intensity same. And then you go for it for, like, as I said, half an hour. So, yeah, that's exactly this, what gives you that endurance during the competitions. Even though, you know, competitions rounds are more like 5 to 7 minutes, not more than that. But still, it gives you a great starting point to, you know, increase your endurance.
Yeah, because what I see also when in the first set, like I think someone like me, an average athlete, let's call it, is always like, it's easy to have the first set quite close to someone like you, but then the performance drops so much. And someone who doesn't have a good endurance is like, after the second, third set, he's like dropping a lot and he needs a lot more rest.
Yeah, and that's that's what I love about these competitions, about this, especially this competition that happened in Sweden, because whoever made the rounds did them perfectly, because I don't usually rush in my rounds, you know. I have my own pace, and I realize if round is good, if it really tests your endurance, your strength, you don't need to rush. Just keep the same pace. If you are truly more endurant, you'll came up first in the end, which is what happened, you know, because people were rushing it for first couple of seconds and they fell down. And I was able, you know, to keep my intensity the same throughout the whole round. So that's why I didn't really rush to, you know, put up my weight vest, take down my weight vest on those little, you know, because if I can mention, at the World Cup, rounds were made a little less perfect than this, because they were more like a race, you know. Rounds were like I don't know, maybe 3 to 4 minutes. And people who were really good in street workout, who were, which performance were, was pretty high, those rounds meant nothing, you know. And the considering factor, if you're going to win or if you're going to lose, was will you put down or up your rest quicker than the other person, you know. So that's why I really, really love this competition in Sweden, because of it.
That's super interesting, because we had the same. I tried to also bring some of our athletes, more athletes to Sweden, to the competitions, competition. But in the beginning, when I talked with Flefiel as the organizer, the rounds, were planned as more short, like the year before. And, then a lot of the athletes said, hey, the high level athletes, hey, it's too short. If it's like only 3-4 minutes, it's more like a speed competition and less endurance competition, because the exactly. True endurance is shown at 6, 7, 8 minutes something, like more simple routines, like less switching between the exercises, but more reps of the exercises. And it's interesting. I'm writing it down, because we're currently also planning the endurance competition for the FIBO, which will take place in April 2024. It's really good confirmation for that, to have longer rounds and to more focus on this, because it shows really more the difference between an average athlete and then a high level athlete in endurance if the round is longer. Because I will admit, when running, you see the people who are not experienced, they start like running quickly in the beginning, you know, and then they fall back. You see it everywhere. And I have to admit, when you set your 131 pyramid routine, I also thought, oh, he only starts with one, and 30 doesn't seem that high as well. And I thought, oh, I think he can do better, or I can do it. But I think in the beginning, yes, it's easy. But then in the middle, I think when you do the 26, 27, 28, and only 45
that's
seconds.
That's when it starts to burn, exactly.
So, I think like having a good knowledge of your body, having the confidence to not rush in the beginning, but to keep the heart rate or the intensity the same throughout the whole round, and not rush on the unimportant things. I think that's really good feedback and good advice from you for competitions.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. I wanted to mention one more thing, especially those kinds of workouts help you when you are competing, and when you got, you know, we got our rounds on the paper for the first time, we saw them on the day of the competition. You can kind of mentally go through every exercise and kind of know when is, you know, going to get hard and how hard it's going to be, because you're already, you know, training exactly like that. So you kind of know how much to push at the start, how much, you know, intensity you should have, how much rest you should take in between every exercise. So it also gives you that kind of an experience, you know, having similar training routines like the ones on the competitions.
That's true. Do you change your diet when preparing for a competition? Maybe you can share your general diet way of eating with us, and then if you change something when a competition approaches.
First of all, no, I don't change my diet. My diet is pretty flexible. I watch out what I eat, but not in the way like I count in my calories. More like I'm just not eating simple sugars or, you know, how do you call it? Those fats that are not natural, but, you know,
saturated
refined
fats. Refined
yeah.
sugar. Yeah,
yeah, trans fats and things like that. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to keep my body healthy in that way. The only thing I keep in the track of is my protein intake, which is 2.2 to 2.5 grams per my kilograms. Of my body weight, and that's really basically it. I really don't watch out too much for, you know, what I eat.
Okay, cool. Yeah, but it also reflects my experience that the protein intake is the most important. How did you get to the 2.2, 2.5 grams? Did you, did you ever try more?
I would like to, you know, do more, but it's hard to put so much food in my stomach. 2.2 was like something that I was just, you know, eating, and I was measuring, okay, if I just eat like I normally do, how much at the day protein can I, you know, intake. So the results were like 2.2, and I was, you know, doing some reading and some research, and for a bodybuilder, that's completely fine, you know, 2 to 2.5 grams per kilogram. So I was like, okay, I just need to stick to my, you know, automatic routine that I have, and I don't really need to change much about it, which is great for me, you know.
Yeah. Generally, how do you get to, like, what kind of protein do you eat? What do you eat in general?
So right now for breakfast, I had some eggs. I usually, you know, try to intake all my protein from the food, but I also am drinking whey, protein shake, protein powder. So that like fulfills all the gaps during the day where my protein intake is kind of low, you know, in between eating, you know, I kind of do my protein shakes. And of course, after the workout, that's when I drink as well.
But multiple per day or one per day, or depending on how your meals were?
So I would say I drink like probably one scoop to one and a half scoop a day of protein powder, and everything else is, you know, from the food.
Okay.
And so that's like 30 grams to 45 grams.
Through the powder. Okay. And do you eat a lot of meat? Like you already said, eggs. What kind of protein sources do you prefer?
Exactly. I eat a lot of meat. Most popular is the chicken, of course. So basically chicken and eggs, like 90% of the time what I eat. They are also the most cheap ones for what you get, you know, for the price. So it's pretty convenient when you're trying to train and eat healthy, I guess.
That's true. And I think it's super important to find a protein source that is that your body is well digesting and that you can work with. I'm always seeing like people trying to go vegetarian, or even myself, I had the experience that if you try to force yourself to eat protein sources that your body is not digesting well and using well, it doesn't make sense. And then you can, you have like big troubles bringing up the protein intake. But it's really something that I would recommend to everyone, checking how much, like checking your protein intake as the most important metric, and seeing Bruno's triceps and shoulders definitely is a good motivation for that, to eat enough protein.
Yeah, start with chicken and eggs.
Nice. Yes, you sent me some of your craziest performances that you're most proud of before the call, and for me it was super stunning. You wrote 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That's absolutely crazy, because it's like I think it's an OG routine from back in the days, from like to have 50 pull-ups and 100 push-ups in 5 minutes, which is already a crazy thing, because it's an EMOM of 10 pull-ups and 20 push-ups in 5 minutes.
Exactly.
And you just doubled that. Tell us how.
Well, I actually saw that from another person you probably know. He was at the competition in Sweden. His name was Uroš Raške. He was third in the competition. Bro, his performance is just crazy. He was like my one of my idols back then, because when I started, he and Kinez, they have Back to the Basic channel. They were already pretty high, and I will always respect them, because when I was, you know, just beginning with the sport, they recognized my performance, my talent, and they did a couple of videos when I was, as I told you, nobody know about me. So I always respect them for that. And yeah, I remember Ashke was doing that set. He did like, he did it in like, I don't know, 4 minutes and 45 seconds, something like that. And I was like, man, I have to try it. And I really didn't know the origin story of that set. I always thought that that was the set and not, you know, the other one. So it was kind of easy, you know, to mentally go through it, I guess, because I thought that's what has to be done. And I think I did it on my first try. I was already, you know, pretty high with my performance. Very close to my peak performance. I think it was like maybe 2 or 3 years ago. I don't know when I recorded that set.
Crazy. Yeah, it shows again that standards are super important. And this is why we often see people training together who are all really strong, because if you surround yourself with strong people, they become your standard. You know, in our gym, we always had Freddy as our standard. He always did his 90, 95, 100 kg additional weight pull-ups. And for us, it was like it is possible. You know, we all looked up to him, and we had many guys pulling 70 kg, 75, 80, because for us, the 100 was...
You were mentally prepared. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I like that.
And even the girls that like my girlfriend, who were only training with guys, for them, for her, like 20 pull-ups is normal. You know, that she does 20 clean pull-ups is normal. But if she would only train with girls who's just started calisthenics, I think she would have different standards. And this is why I'm super interested in how, do you have like a surrounding? Do you train yourself alone and you get your standards through YouTube? Or do you have friends who you train with and they are also advanced? Well, who is your training partner?
Mm-hmm. So when I started with the sport, I would like to say that I was a standard to others. Because, as I said, we all started at the same time, but for some reason, I would always, you know, learn stuff quicker. Because, as I said, at the start, when we first started with street workout, we wanted to do freestyle, not sets and reps. So I was always first to get, I don't know, straddle planche, front lever, you know. And for some reason, those guys didn't take that as a motivation. They take that as he's better. I'm not genetically built for this. And they kind of quit, you know, training along the way. But if they, you know, take a different approach and, told themselves, look, if he can do it, I can do it as well. Maybe I need more time. I'm taller. I'm, not genetically built. I just need to be more consistent. They will definitely do it. Yeah. So it's all about the mindset, I guess. And when I was, growing through the sport, I think having a standard that is better than you is the same as having no standard at all, because I was training completely alone, so I didn't know what's good, what's bad. But I was, you know, shooting for, how you could say, shooting for the stars, right? I always, because I didn't know what's average, I didn't know what's bad, I didn't know what's good, I was just aiming, you know, I need to be better. So that's probably the same as having someone who is actually better than you.
Well, yeah, like as you said, when you have someone who is a lot stronger than you, you can either take it as a motivation or as an excuse. And this is where it like with everything in life, you can always it always depends on your reaction to it. You know, you can injure yourself. But you can take something from it and more concentrate on learning the theoretical things about your sport or working on your weaknesses. If you injured your elbow, you can work on your legs or something. But there are people who stop because of it and people who double down, you know, who say, oh, now I'm going all in. That's interesting that you also had this.
The best things that I learned from my mistakes, which is crazy. you know. So yeah, I completely agree with that.
You talked about statics, about straddle planche and front lever. How do you? What is your level in statics right now?
Probably close to zero. I was pretty good at it, you know. But when I realized that I'm having potential in sets and reps, I was, you know, going 100% at it. Because if I would try to build myself in sets and reps and do statics at the same time, I'll probably be average in both of those, you know. So yeah, I kind of left statics behind. I think if I give myself 1 month, 2 to 3 months, maybe I'll be able to, you know, bring back some of the best elements that I could do, which is like a full planche, maybe for 2 to 3 seconds, but I'll definitely be able to bring it back. And Hefesto was probably the hardest element that I did. I don't know. I guess I'm bad in pull. Some people I see pulling Hefesto like it's nothing, but it was like much harder than full planche for me. So yeah, Hefesto, I'm the most proud of it.
Do you think there is a direct benefit of training reps and like a transfer of strength when training reps, that you automatically improve your statics, or that you automatically learn the front lever by doing a lot of pull-ups and when you're elite in pull-ups?
Oh, yes, of course. Because that's how I basically learn my statics, through the sets and reps. So yeah, it's basically the same when you see, when you compare, I guess, street workouter with bodybuilder. Because I saw many street workouters, when they, you know, try to lift weights, they will do much better than any guy who lifts weights and try to do pull-ups, you know. They're just kind of, because of that, maybe high volume training, type of training, they just build themselves, you know, for other things. They basically have more power, I would say. So yeah, definitely. Sets and reps can build a good foundations for statics.
I think one reason is the high volume, as you said. Maybe another reason is the full range of motion, because if you train in the full range of motion, you also have strength everywhere, and not like a bodybuilder who has problems holding a straddle planche because he doesn't have that straight arm strength.
Because he only trains. And if you compare compound exercises with the iso exercises as well, yeah, exactly.
In the beginning, you said you're natural. Why do you say that?
Bro, I have like hundreds of questions from other people. Bro, are you natural? And it's always funny to me to ask that question, because even if I'm not, do you really think that I'm going, you know, to tell you that I am? But I am. I'm natural. Yeah, I guess people, we talked about standards, and people today have a really long standards because there are not a lot of people that are truly putting in work and that are natural at the same time, I would like to say. And that's why, you know, when you see, and of course, street workout sets and reps, high volume trainings are pretty new to, you know, human population, I would say, because there are many people are most familiar with bodybuilding, and you already know what you are able to, you know, achieve with bodybuilding natural, but no one knows what you are able to achieve with high volume bodyweight trainings natural. So if you see a street workouter, you know, that is better built than a bodybuilder, he's automatically, you know, on steroids or something like that, which is not the case. I truly think that for a great body, street workout is probably much better options if you're starting with and you wanna, you know, do it natural and not compete on the stage like other bodybuilders.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's so much simpler. You know, you don't have to think about a lot of things. As you said, maybe it's not the most effective way to get there, but it's like really simple by just doing a lot of volume and pull-ups and dips and push-ups and muscle-ups. Yeah, I think this way is also underrated to build a physique with calisthenics and street workout, because there is still the rumor you can't build muscle with street workout.
Yeah, of course. And it's, I guess it's pretty hard to follow through just because, you know, of such a high volume. It's much easier, you know, to go to the gym and do, I don't know, eight reps for, you know, four rounds of these exercises and just, you know, kind of switch from one weight to the other, keep your trainings simple. But it's really, really hard. You know, you really have to love street workout, that way of training, to, you know, so you're able to cope with that kind of intensity that the training can give you.
Do you love your trainings? Do you love every training that you do?
Of course, of course. And that's why, you know, I'm still progressing, because I love it so much. I think about training, but I'm not training, you know. So, yeah, I 100%, you know, I love it the same that I loved it the first time that I started it. So, yeah.
Because otherwise you wouldn't do it for 12, 13 years now. It's you have to love it to be able to continue it for such a long time and to stick with it and put in the discipline, because discipline becomes easy when you love it. You know, when you just love it so much, then discipline is like really easy. And I think
it's actually hard to call it discipline even, you know, when you really love it. So.
Yeah. Then rest days become the torture, like sitting at home and
that's
not being
so
able.
True. Yeah. That's the discipline. Yeah, taking a rest day, and yeah, that's true. That's true.
And this is why it's so important. This is why I love calisthenics. It's like it has so much variety. You know, I never judge someone because he wants to do freestyle or one rep max or like reps or only statics, because I think the most important for everyone listening and for everyone in the calisthenics scene is that you find the workout style that you love, that you that fits your personality or your passion, and then it becomes easy to achieve something great and to reach your goals, because you will have it much easier, like showing discipline, and you don't have to fight against not wanting to train every day. But if it's a passion, it's much easier.
That's the best approach for me.
And this is why people, for example, Stipke, he switched to more hybrid training. We saw Vadi Molenik switching more to CrossFit, which is all okay, in my opinion, because I think the most important thing is that you don't get bored and that you don't get sad through your workouts, but you really enjoy them. And this is what I feel when I see you. You know, you burn for it. You say, "Oh, yeah, you know, fucking tendonitis, go away." You know, I want to continue working out at full speed. But yeah,
of course, yeah, I can agree with that 100%.
Nice. Yeah. What are the next goals? What are the next steps?
So for this year, all that I have planned right now is the competitions you are doing in fourth month. But other than that, you know, I just want to give my body the rest that it needs right now, because this last year I only had planned one competitions, and I did three of them, you know, in like 4 months. I think three competitions in 4 months. So yeah, for this year, I don't think I'll do anything until the fourth month. I'll just do some deloads, go to some sport massages, you know, and stuff like that, just to feel better.
Yeah.
And I guess we'll see about what's happening after that, you know.
Nice. So recovery advice from your side, you do deload, which means is it comparable to your 30% active rest dip training that you talked about on Monday? Or how does a deload look for you?
So deloads for me are, yeah, basically the same routines. I just did a less amount of reps, or I kind of increased the rest periods, so I can focus on my range of motion, you know, and stuff like that. So yeah, because I heard that for the tendons, the best way you can, heal the tendon to make it stronger is to focus on, is it eccentric, right?
Mm-hmm.
Type of movement. So what I do right now is I just try to bring out of the explosiveness in my workouts. So I basically do everything slow. So I still can feel the burn of the workout, even though it's not as as intense as it usually is, you know, because of that slow movements. So those are like my deloads. I also had one rest day a week. Now I have two rest days. I had one leg day a week. Now I have two leg days a week, just, you know, to get my upper body a little more rest. And I think that's about it, really. I do some foam rolling as well, stretching as well. I realize it helps really, really a lot, you know, to recover.
And then the sport massages that also help from time to time.
Of course. I never been to one in my life, so this year
okay.
I'm definitely going, yeah, I think it will change my life, man.
Yeah, I think you deserve it now. Your body deserves it. Nice. So it was really, really interesting to talk to you. I really enjoyed this this talk, and I'm really looking forward to see you perform next year at full power after these days of rest and deload. And yeah, thank you for sharing so much.
Thank you, man. It was a pleasure for me as well. Thank you so much.
And Merry Christmas. Have a good start into 2024. And yeah, we'll stay in touch, Bruno.
Of course. Wishing Merry Christmas to you and your family as well.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
See you.